cancer these days is such a strange thing, because for so many people, a diagnosis of cancer is, okay, well, I'm going to get some chemotherapy. We're going to do some surgery. I'm going to go through a year or so of really difficult things. And then I'm going to go in remission, or they're going to say cured. The longer we talked with my oncologist, he made it very clear that we would never use words like remission. We would never use words like cure, in relationship to my, and to my cancer. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to A Place in the Conversation. My name is Dan Neiswanger. I'm the spiritual formation catalyst for A Place in the Conversation. And today we're making a place in the conversation for something a little bit different. I've invited my good friend, Ronnie Russell. And you might remember Ronnie. He was a guest on the podcast probably about a year ago, actually. And when he talked about the difference between retirement and refirement. And it was a fantastic episode. There'll be a link to that episode with this episode here when we publicize it. But I've invited Ronnie to come back today, and we're going to exchange roles. Ronnie is going to go ahead and be the person who's asking the questions, doing the interviewing. Ronnie and I have known each other for a large number of years, probably about 13, probably close to 15 years now. He's a great friend. I don't know if any of you are pay attention to, but David Letterman's got one of those. He's a great interviewer, and he's got these great shows and interviews people. And I thought, you know what? Ronnie's no David Letterman, but he's getting close. And so we'll have Ronnie be the person who asks some questions of me. And that might be an interesting thing for some of you. So Ronnie, why don't you take a second and introduce yourself, and then you can just kind of take things over.
And by the way, I do have something in common with David Letterman. About the same age.
Okay, all right, there you go.
Okay, so as Dan said, maybe 15 years ago we met each other, and it was kind of a strange way to meet. He visited our church, I was a pastor then, and on the way out he said, I'd like to have coffee with you, or breakfast, I don't remember which it was. And so we met for breakfast, or coffee, or both, and he started talking about our church and what his impressions were, which I think were all positive. And so as he talked on, I thought, this dude has been to seminary or divinity school or something, because he was too knowledgeable about the lingo that church people use. So that's how we met. And about 7 or 8 years ago, it was in May of 2016, and I can't remember how he communicated this to me first. I can't remember if it was a text or a phone call, but he told me that he'd had a pretty serious diagnosis. So, Dan, why don't you tell us what that diagnosis was, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, thank you, Ronnie. So it was in May of 2016. Everything seemed to be going very, very well in my life at that point. I didn't have any kind of signs of being sick or being ill. I did a funeral on a Thursday night for a dear friend of mine, and felt perfectly healthy during the entire time. And at the end of it was just a little bit tired, a little bit achy. And went home and rested all day Friday. Didn't get out of my chair all day Friday. Just figured I had just worn myself out. And then Saturday ended up in the ER because I couldn't get a full breath of air. And it was by Monday of the next week that I met my oncologist for the first time and diagnosed me with stage 4 colon cancer.
So you met your oncologist before or after you learned what the diagnosis was?
Oh, he shared it with me. He was, he was the guy who came in and said, mm-hmm. this is what's going on.
What were the thoughts that ran through your mind at that time?
There were so many. Nancy was there with me, my wife, and Joseph was off to college. Rayanne was a junior in high school, but she was not there. So it was really just Nancy and myself and the oncologist. At first, cancer these days is such a strange thing because for so many people, a diagnosis of cancer is, okay, well, I'm going to get some chemotherapy. We're going to do some surgery. I'm going to go through a year or so of really difficult things. And then I'm going to go in remission, or they're going to say cured. And so at first I was like, okay, well, strap in. It's going to be a difficult year or two. And everything is going to be okay. So that was there. And the longer we talked with my oncologist, he made it very clear that we would never use words like remission. We would never use words like cure, mm-hmm. In relationship to my, and to my cancer. He spent a lot of time with us that day, which was just amazing. He's a very compassionate, gracious guy. I started to think about Nancy, because at one point I asked my oncologist, so what does this mean? What are you telling me? As far as life expectancy and everything. And it took a little while to pin him down and make him talk about that, but he finally did. And he told me that the best I could hope for was 2 years, and that it was time for me to go home and get my affairs in order. That was very hard to hear. And at that point, I was worried about Nancy and the kids. I was worried about the church that I was pastoring. And the arrogant piece of it for me at that moment was, well, you've been a pastor all these years. You've helped all these families through this stuff. You've got this. You can handle this. This is what you do. You step into hospital rooms where people have heard things like this, and you help the families navigate through this stuff. So, Dan, you've got this. Mm-hmm.
That did sound pretty arrogant.
It did. It is.
Or unrealistic.
It's arrogant. It's arrogant and unrealistic. But that's I was all, like I said, I was all over the map. I was all over the map. So
Nancy was in the room with you.
She was.
Could you see her face and see what her reaction was?
She and I, as I often talk about it, we were about four feet apart. Mm-hmm. I was in my bed. She was in her chair. And yet we couldn't have been any further apart. Mm-hmm. I could see her face, and she was trying not to cry. Mm-hmm. For me. And while I started to wrestle with issues of my own mortality, she was starting to wrestle with, at that point I was 48.
She was starting to wrestle with your mortality.
Well, she was starting to wrestle with my mortality, and what is she going to do at 48 with, you know, with Rayanne being in high school, and what's the rest of her life going to look like without me? Mm. And we used to go out to restaurants all the time. We still do. But her thing from the time when we were 20 and 30 and married, you know, we would walk out, we'd walk into a restaurant and there'd be that couple sitting in the corner, you know, they're 80 years old and they're just sitting there, and she would point at them and she goes, "That's going to be you someday." She goes, "That's going to be us. Yeah, we're going to be that couple sitting in the corner at 80. And I said, "Would you just stop that?" And she just says, nope. She goes, "I'm going to be with you forever." And that was ripped away from her. And it was terrifying.
I'm sure it was. What happened next? What was the next step in all this?
For me, the next step was that night, right? I processed. Nancy will tell you that I went through the stages of grief just really quickly. Mm-hmm. And I did for the first time. I've been through them many times, but for the first time I went through them that night, and I listened to music all night long. I hardly slept. Mm-hmm. I was angry. I was furious.
Tell me about your anger.
Oh, I was just, I was so angry at the situation. I was angry with God. This was not like we all live our lives, and we all write these imaginary scripts, you know, in every script that we come up with, we're the primary actor, right? We're the most important player. And this just doesn't happen. And in the scripts that we write for ourselves, and yet here it was, and I was furious. And because I had plans, like I knew what I wanted to accomplish. I knew what I wanted to get done and with my life and how I wanted to invest it. And it was all getting ripped away from me. Mm-hmm. And I knew how I wanted to spend the years after my children left the house with my wife. Mm-hmm. And I had plans for all of this. And I went through all of that. And I ended up somewhere in the middle of the night, early in the morning. You know, you and I have worked together, you know, doing stuff. And, you know, I'm a planner, right? And so somewhere around the early morning, I just started crafting plans. And it was, okay, well, if the most you've got is 2 years, then you've got a lot to cram into 2 years. And you've got a lot to get ready for Nancy, for the house. You've mm-hmm. got a lot to get ready for the church that they can transition smoothly. And I really wasn't concerned about myself, because mm-hmm. like, I'm okay. You know, I'm okay. Take me home to be with Jesus today. That's okay. It's those who I leave behind that I'm just concerned about.
So I'm sure I'm going to guess that you had been angry at God before this, but this was different, right?
Oh, this was terribly different. Yeah. This was a whole nother level of a whole nother level of different. And you know, one of the things that helped with that for me was the music of U2, which is deeply, profoundly spiritual music. And they do a song called 40, which is Psalm 40. Mm-hmm. And it's a song of lament in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, how long must we sing this song? How long? And I just put that thing on repeat, and that was, I can't tell you how many times I listened to that song that night. And there was one of the things that was very, I think, healing in all that for me was that it was okay to be angry with God. God wasn't upset with me that I was angry. God, it was, yeah, this is something worth being angry over. And even in the midst of the anger, you know, the Spirit of God was there. The Spirit of God met me in the midst of it. And there was a strange sense of peace in the midst of it.
Okay, so I was going to ask this question later, but since we're on that subject, what part has your Christian faith played in all of these 7.5 years?
So the Jesuits talk about all of life being gift and grace, and I think it's some of the most deep wisdom that exists spiritually. That every piece of life is gift, and the good, the bad, and just the downright ugly, it's all a gift. We find it very easy to find the gift of life in the good. We might struggle to find the gift of life in some of the bad things that happen, but a lot of times when something bad happens, we can look back on it later and say, oh yeah, something good came of that. You know, I wasn't expecting to get fired, but you know what? Man, I've got a better job now. Okay. You know, it was bad, but look at what happened out of that. So what a gift that was. You know, we go through a rough patch in our lives, and it was difficult to go through, but we went through it and we survived it. And wow, I made a couple friends in there that they're gonna be lifelong friends. And what a gift that is. And it takes us a little while to see it sometimes, but it's all there. But the downright ugly, the loss of a loved one, the diagnosis you weren't expecting, all that kind of stuff. It's a lot harder sometimes to see the gift of life there, but it exists. It is there. I've invited the Spirit to show me that, you know, show me the gift, in the midst of this downright ugly thing that's going on, around me all the time. And there's so much good that's there that, you know, it's beautiful. It just changes the way that you think at life. Think about life. It changes the way that you think about life. All of life is gift, and the grace is the Spirit of God working and moving, in the midst of all of it—the good, the bad, the ugly. You know, one of the greatest gifts that cancer has given me is that I'm not the person I was before. I've slowed down. I see the world differently. I see people differently. I see my wife and I see my kids differently. There was a time when I really started to feel that inside of me. And just trying to check it to make sure that I was right. I said to my wife, I said to Nancy, I'm not the same person I used to be. And she just busted out laughing. She goes, no, you're not. And it doesn't mean I was a bad person before, because I wasn't. But I'm way more compassionate. I was compassionate before, but I am way more compassionate now.
Different level of compassion.
Different level of compassion, yeah.
Well, let me ask you this. You had that anger toward God, which is not unnormal at all. Did any of that anger spill over into other situations that were not nearly as drastic as this, or people? Did you get angry with somebody who cut you off in traffic, that kind of thing?
I had to be careful how I spoke to people. Because I was very clear when somebody tells you have less than 2 years to live, clarity becomes, you're just very clear on what matters to you and what doesn't matter to you. I didn't have a bandwidth or the ability to deal with foolishness anymore. And so I would, times when things that would go on inside of church or personal relationships and stuff, where before I might just listen and try to, I was like, you know what? This is just stupid. If you would just, you know, here's what you do to fix this. I can fix this for you. Here's three easy steps. And people was, well, you know, I really want to. No, you want to waddle in what you're waddling in. And I really don't want to waddle with you there. And because my time is too short to waddle with you there. Now, if you want to move towards somewhere healthy, I can help you do that. Mm-hmm. But if you just want to waddle and waver in this, that's fine. But I'm not going to do that with you anymore. Yeah. And so I would, the anger would show up in places like that, where I would just, people would perceive it as anger. I would say, look, I'm speaking with clarity. Like I know. And I would speak with short, it would be short. I don't have time to explain 5 or 6 or 10 or 15 times. Mm-hmm. We can talk for a few, you know, talk and explain it 7 or 8 times. But after that, I'm done. And so I had to be careful about how I spoke to people.
I know things like joy and peace spill over and influence other people if you're around them long enough.
But yeah.
I had the same question in my mind about the anger, if that was a spillover to other people. But it was for you, it sounded like it was more of, I don't have time for this.
Yeah, it was. It really was. It was just, I just don't have time for this. And, you've been a pastor for years. You know, that people that will, they just want to talk about the problems, and that's wonderful, and that's healthy, maybe for them to just continue to talk about them, but they really don't have a desire to fix them, and because there's something about talking about them that as you talk about them, it gives a release from it, so you don't take the steps to fix it. Mm-hmm. And I would just, my wife laughs and she says, you get away with so much stuff. And I said, well, no, I speak with clarity. And, you know, and if people don't like it, okay.
Well,
I don't worry about it anymore.
In my experience, I have said things like that in the past, or replied to somebody with a little bit of annoyance, and they probably understood it.
Yeah.
So I understand what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. So So I mean, that's part of the journey, right? And that's just mm-hmm. been a big part of it. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So 7.5 years have gone by. 5.5 years, roughly, from what the oncologist told you.
Yeah.
What have you been doing in these, with this gift of extra time that you have?
Yeah, isn't that crazy, right? This gift of extra time. There was a decision early on that I made, which was, they've told me this, and the only reason I have this fear about dying is because some man in a white coat stood at the foot of my bed and told me I have 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the spirit spoke to me one day. I was sitting in my office and I was frozen and like I was having a hard time focusing and a hard time doing things. And all of a sudden it was just like, you know, the only reason you feel this way, the only reason you have this fear is because some person in a white coat stood at the foot of your bed and told you this news. And yet there are people who are leaving their house today to go to work who are not going to make it home. And they have no clue.
Right.
And so I just sat and thought about that for, I bet, a couple hours. And it was just like, yeah, you know what? I could go on disability. I could sit on a porch, look out the sunroom window, and just wait for something bad to happen. Or I could make the best of every day that God gives me from now until whenever
mm-hmm.
calls me home. And I chose the latter. And so I continued working from as the pastor of the church that I was at from May of 2016 to August of 21, when my oncologist really spoke pretty significantly and said, it's time, you need to stop.
Stop your work.
Stop the work. Yeah. He goes, you need to stop the work. And so I was able to keep preaching and keep doing working with the people in the church and keep working in the community and keep doing all that. And then since August of 21, you know, the nonprofit, A Place in the Conversation, you know, by the time I got done cleaning out my office at the church and resettling everything at home, it was like, yeah, okay, let's spin this up and let's see what happens. You know, I'm not going to sit at home and do nothing. And just wait and see what happens. And so the nonprofit is beautiful. If I get up in the morning and I feel like working, I work a little bit. And if I don't, I sleep all day. And there's very real, you know, in the course of a week, I might sleep all day Monday, do a little work on Tuesday, sleep all day Wednesday, and do a little work on Thursday. But so the podcast this gives me great joy. I love mm-hmm. sitting and talking with people, and being able to share these conversations with people is a beautiful thing. Been able to complete writing a couple of books, one on worship, one on caring conversations. And that's just been amazing. And we've been, through the nonprofit, have been working with congregations, helping them think about what it means to worship and mm-hmm. to worship well, how to navigate what the future of the church is going to look like coming out of COVID and dealing with some of the struggles that, mm-hmm. that churches have these days, and getting to spend a lot of time with Nancy. She's working from home these days. And so we're just in each other's way all the time, which is an absolute blessing, and I love it. And so, yeah, it's a beautiful thing.
I had a sister who died at a young age, age 44, with breast cancer. And she had a boyfriend at the time who was an alcoholic and was going to AA meetings, and she would go to AA meetings with him. And she talked a lot about what she heard at those meetings. And it's kind of a running thing for recovering alcoholics. One day at a time, sweet Jesus.
Yeah.
And that song was sung at her funeral. And I don't think a day goes by that I don't think about those words. Yeah. One day at a time.
One day at a time. The church has so many AA meetings that meet there, which was a gift, you know, I've never struggled with alcohol in my life. It's never been one of the things that I've struggled with. There were so many people that were a part of the groups that I asked if I could attend meetings, and sure enough, they let me attend. So I started to attend. Mm-hmm. And they say the same thing, one day at a time. And I would laugh at them. I'd say, guys, that's the dumbest thing. Like, I've never heard that. Like, you know, like my wall calendars, right? It's 12 months out. And I would have two wall calendars up, one for the current year, one for the next year. You know, we're 24 months out in order to keep track of stuff, one day at a time.
That sounds like you, Dan.
Yeah, yeah. Like, if you don't know what's happening, one day at a time is crazy. And then I got sick, and then it became, one day at a time. All I have to do is to know what is the right thing to do today at this moment. All I need to, you know, and then I started breaking it down. It's like, look, it's 1 hour at a time. I have to know what to do, what to say, to get through this hour. And then to get through the next hour. Mm-hmm. And I would go sit in these meetings and listen.
This was after your diagnosis.
After my diagnosis, yeah. And I would just go sit and listen. And it became a place of spiritual health and well-being. You know, some of the AA meetings are open meetings. So, yeah. You know, if you're not, you just have to identify yourself as a non-alcoholic as your... They'll ask the question, and I would identify myself, and it just it was just such a blessing to be there and to be a part of it, and I just absolutely found such spiritual strength in there, and they had a big forget what anniversary it was they were having, and they invited me to come and I said I'm not allowed to speak, but can I say something? And they said, oh, yeah, you can say whatever you want. You know, and so I stood up and I talked about that. I said, you guys should say this to me every day. You know, one day at a time, Pastor, one day at a time. Mm-hmm. And I said, I thought you're all crazy. I said, you know, until I got sick. And then it's just like, I get it.
And yeah. So that was kind of a trivial saying to you until the diagnosis.
Until the diagnosis. And it meant something. And then it means something. Yeah, yeah. It just, yeah.
Let me back up to... I lost my train of thought earlier. That's why I had a pause.
Yeah.
We were talking about people that you would talk to with just minor difficulties rather than a diagnosis of cancer. I used to think of two groups of people who had need. One, I thought of people in need. And to me, that was legitimate.
Yeah.
But then there were the needy people who were always coming to your door, always calling. They never seemed to get anything resolved.
Yeah.
So that's what I heard in talking when you were talking about that you're the one in need.
Yeah.
But you're not needy. I've never seen any hint of that in conversations we've had.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Yeah. I try not, you know, I think everybody is in need. And I think, and how you approach it, you know, and what you're going to do about it, where you're going to look for help, and how you're going to step into.
I don't know if there's really a distinct difference in the dictionary or in thought about people in need and needy people, but that's how I've come to distinguish them through the years.
Yeah.
And it sounds like, and when I would talk to needy people, I wouldn't have much patience with them, as you indicated earlier.
Yeah.
So that's, I suppose, a normal thing for somebody in your situation. Mm-hmm. So where do you go from here?
Well, I'm as we're talking now, we're a few days after Thanksgiving, of 2023, and so I'll be starting a new treatment because my cancer is growing and spreading, which is not healthy. We'll be starting a new treatment in a week or so, and hoping that starts to knock stuff back. And the treatments that used to work have not been working, and it has a lot to do with my liver. Mm-hmm. My liver is damaged from all the different treatments that I've been on and everything. And a lot of the chemo drugs are processed through your liver. Mm-hmm. So the weaker that your liver is, the less drugs they can put through your system, because it damages your liver. And when your liver is not healthy, it leads to all whole other complications. And so,
is it a form of psoriasis? Has that ever been mentioned to you?
They haven't mentioned that, but my bile ducts are all destroyed. That's the biggest problem right now, is my bile ducts are destroyed.
And just to clarify, it's a non-alcoholic psoriasis.
Oh yeah.
There are two different kinds, least two. So you and I have stayed in touch these 7.5 years on the times when you would drive down here because your in-laws live here.
Yes.
Your father-in-law passed about a year ago, mm-hmm. and you're down to visit your mother-in-law now.
Yeah.
And what about routine things like driving? Do you do any of that much?
We're in Locust, North Carolina right now, and so I did the lion's share of the driving down here. Mm. This time. And Nancy is, we change based on, how I'm feeling and what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
So, it can change on a dime. You know, I can be feeling really, really good and I can, take care of all kinds of stuff. And like the other day, we did a lot of work out in the yard for her, for my mother-in-law, and I felt great all day long. At the end of the night, I needed Nance to help me get out of my chair to head to bed. Mm. You know, and it's just, it makes no sense.
Has that been common throughout the 7.5 years, or just more recently?
It's been common throughout the 7.5 years as I've been going through different kinds of treatment. As the treatment comes and goes, there's been times I haven't been able to button my own shirt, haven't been able to get dressed. It's just, and all the drugs affect you differently, so it's just been... Yeah, it's just been very, there is a pattern to it, but you really don't know, I just really don't know exactly what it's going to be until I'm into it. And I think it's important to note that every cancer journey is different. Every person's going to experience the drugs differently and make the, just because one person experiences this doesn't mean everybody else is. It's just a very unique thing.
When we talk on the phone at the beginning, whether I've called you or you've called me, I can tell almost instantly how you're feeling.
Yeah.
Even though you'll say, I'm okay. And so I'm here to say, you can't fake it very well.
No. Yeah, no, I can't, because it's a lot of it right now is my liver, right? And it's a lot of it right now is my liver, and the liver is just when my liver is in good shape, then I can think clearly and I can speak clearly and I can do all that kind of stuff. When my liver is not good and clear, then I'm exhausted. And by what I mean exhausted, you know, people, it's kind of funny because people will say, well, I'm old too, and I get tired and I feel like I'm exhausted all the time. And it's not the same. Like, you know, mm-hmm. I'll sleep for 12 hours at night. I'll get up for an hour and a half, and then I'll go back to bed, and I'll get up and I'll eat lunch. And then I'll go back to bed. And, you know, it's a different kind of exhaustion, and there's a brain fog connected with it where my brain just, like I can't read, or I can read. I could read a whole book, but at the end of it, you would ask me, well, Dan, what was that book about? And I could tell you the title. I might tell you the author, but I'm not going to tell you anything else because it's just, you know. So,
okay, so I'm in my mid-70s, and a lot of things you described, like brain fog, happen to me every day. But this is a little premature for you. And you mentioned you had trouble buttoning your shirt, and I have gradually shifted to pullover shirts because I have arthritis in my left thumb.
Yeah.
And tried buttoning a shirt without your left thumb.
No, you can't. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there's ways to work around stuff, right? I mean, you just have to kind of get smart about some things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah. Well, hey, listen, Ronnie, thank you for being willing to take the time. Thank you for, taking over as the guest host for a place in the conversation and asking all the questions.
Well, I was honored that you asked me. It makes me think of another late night comedian, Johnny Carson. He would have guests to fill in for him. So glad to do it.
Good. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. And everybody, listen, as you've been listening to our conversation here today, I think one of the things that I would like you to take away from it is sometimes, you know, as you interact with people, you're just going to have no idea what's going on in their world, and they're going to have no idea what's going on in your world. And so just pray for the heart, mind, the eyes and the ears, to truly see what's going on in people's lives. And maybe ask a few questions about what's going on in people's lives. So often what we do is we will ask somebody how they're doing, and somebody will say fine. And we all know that fine is just a garbage answer that really doesn't mean much of anything. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's really important and worthwhile to spend a few minutes and really ask, no, truly, honestly, I care. How are you doing? And in that moment, you start to learn about somebody else's journey. And as you learn about their journey and what's going on in their world, you might learn a little bit about your own at the exact same time. And I think that's valuable for all of us. So thank you again for joining us here at A Place in the Conversation. Until next time, may you just be abundantly aware of the Spirit alive and well and at work in your world.